Sunday was the final opportunity to see someone with a G on their helmet playing a game until next season. We're not going to break the game down itself, but we will talk about some of the Packers' connections in the Pro Bowl. To do so, we bring on 24/7 Sports Insider Luke Rogers. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about the Pro Bowl. We're not going to be breaking down the game itself. It's not worthy of that. But we will be talking about many of the Packers' connections in the Pro Bowl. To do that, we have us joining us on the phone this morning, 24/7 Sports Insider Luke Rogers. Luke, how you doing this morning?
Brian, I'm doing well. Glad to be here. Can't believe it's already the first Monday of the month here.
Yeah, hard to believe, huh? We're glad to have you on here for your usual monthly engagement, the first Monday of every month. Luke, let's start with a guy that didn't play in the Pro Bowl, quarterback Aaron Rodgers, who we learned had a good excuse for bowing out of the game, having surgery on his knee immediately after the season came to a close. Luke, I guess my question for you is, to what extent do you think Aaron's knee impacted his relative struggles in 2015?
Brian, I don't think it did, to be honest. I think it's, you know, when you look at a scoping procedure like that, it has a lot to do with an injury and a previous injury. And funny enough, I remember Aaron Turner's ACL when we were in high school playing basketball, playing a pickup game of basketball, and he ended up playing on that knee until he ended up at Cal where they did the surgery to repair it. It's not the first time he's had it orthopedically scoped in order to kind of clear out some of the damage and some of the wear and tear there.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he does have some swelling that continues to happen in that knee over the course of the season. And, I mean, if you look at the season this year, Aaron had to do a lot of things outside of the pocket. Mm-hmm. He actually ran for 21 yards against Arizona in the playoff game. On two rushes. But a lot of what he does, especially with the way that the offensive line was a lot of patchwork, plugging guys in, playing Shredder at tackle, waiting for Bakhtiari to come back, losing Balaga, Josh, TJ, Lindsley, all banged up during the course of the season. Mm-hmm. Aaron had to do a lot of things outside the pocket, and that had to do with mobility. And I don't see a knee injury being anything but, you know, a cleanup procedure, a postseason procedure for him, just to get himself as healthy as possible going into the 2016 season. It's not, you know, I don't believe it correlates to his play. And I think if you watched the play, the issues with Aaron over the course of the season weren't him and his mobility.
Yep.
I mean, he did take a lot of sacks, but I believe that was more of a product of kind of the, you know, it's the thing we talked about before. It's the inability of the receivers to get separation, sort of the inconsistencies in the offensive line, and then, you know, possibly Aaron looking down the line, Aaron not keeping his eyes down the field, Aaron holding the ball too long, trying to make a play. And, you know, I see all those things as much more impactful than a knee surgery. I think it just becomes sort of when you're finishing a 10th season in the NFL, it doesn't matter who you are. You're going to have your fair amount of injuries and, you know, just injuries that that are due from wear and tear. And this to me is that procedure. If we were talking about him having, you know, an MCL surgery or something that was a little more, mm-hmm. you know, a little more intense, a little bit more significant, then I think we could probably point to some things. But we watched the tape, and I'd turn it back to you and say, you know, you watched every game as well as I did. There didn't seem to be anything from his, you know, from his movement stats. I don't want to say footwork, because I think Aaron's footwork actually was not as great as it was, you know, previous seasons. But I don't think that has anything to do with him physically as much as it does with what was going on in front of him. So
do we know what leg it is? Is it the plant leg, or is it the left or the right? I guess is what I'm saying.
You're going to test me now. I'm trying to remember what
I'm not even sure there's been a report that's identified to that specificness.
I'm going to have to return to that question because I got to think about that one for a second. I'm trying to remember. We were playing pickup basketball. You were sophomore high school. I was a senior. And I remember it happening. And we were just messing around with some friends, and it kind of had something weird happen to his knee. But that's the one that, you know, that's the only one that bothered him. It wouldn't be his other knee.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of been very, very healthy. So, yeah, you know, let me think about that one here for a second.
No problem. Anyway, someone else that missed the Pro Bowl on Sunday is Packers head coach Mike McCarthy. Although he would appear to have a legitimate excuse, as we learned, he was actually hospitalized with a stomach illness. But I think McCarthy's absence kind of brings attention to how many people in general miss the Pro Bowl. But Luke, I'll ask you this. I mean, what can be done? I've heard people throw out suggestions as, you know, should the Pro Bowl be a skills challenge? Should it be a futures game? Should there be no game whatsoever? What is your solution for the Pro Bowl?
Well, Brian, I know a lot of the guys in the league would like to get rid of it. You know, I remember, you know, I went to the Pro Bowl in 2010 and also in 2012.
Okay.
And I had, you know, I talked to enough veterans there that, including after the 2012 Pro Bowl, guys that said that they were never coming back, whether they got voted or not. And I'm not going to talk about who those people were, but I think among veterans especially, which is why I think we talk about futures and why we talk about skill position, I think for the young guys, it's real exciting to get to Hawaii. A lot of those guys haven't been out there since we grew up. You know, I grew up in California, so I went to Hawaii when I was 18 for the first time on a little family vacation. It's a lot closer if you're in California than if you grew up on the eastern seaboard or in the south or whatever. So I think it's a really cool experience for the young guys. And I think you can look at Clay Matthews taking the inside linebackers out to – you know, to Hawaii for kind of a thank you for a treat for those guys.
Yep.
A bunch of young guys that have never been out to the islands. Those kind of experiences are really cool, I think, for them. And why maybe a futures game does make sense, especially with the idea that a lot of veterans are the guys that don't want to play hard, don't want to tackle, don't want to get hurt. I mean, look at Tyler Eifert last night. Tyler was banged up all season. He was out with concussions, neck and head injuries, and he ends up leaving the Pro Bowl in a walking boot.
Yep.
I think that's kind of the biggest. I think that's kind of the biggest fear of any player that heads out there, especially players that deal with injuries on a regular basis. Even if you don't, I think it's the idea that you're playing for nothing. And I hate to say it, but even the cash prize that they dole out for winning teams is really not significant, you know, in comparison to an NFL contract.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a game that's meaningless, and unlike the NHL and the MLB, we can't have it mid-season because, you know, football being a once-a-week sport, you only have Sunday games, it's tough to really make a call that's significant during midway in the season. And guys aren't going to want to play and get hurt in a game that's meaningless halfway through a season as well.
Yep.
So you're stuck with something that I think does need to change. I think the players would like to see a change. And I think if you look at how many guys bowed out with injuries, you know, and they use injuries loosely, it's not a big deal. You know, Charles Woodson ended up showing up, and Charles was his last year at Swanson. If you want to go that direction for him, I think it was like a victory lap for Charles, and that was a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the young guys, I think you saw the young guys play hard. I mean, I think guys like Jameis Winston was out there just swinging it, and You know, I don't know how Willie does if the defense is actually playing, but those guys are really, really, these guys are really getting after it.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're watching Odell Beckham Jr. play safety, when you're watching Devontae Freeman play corner, it's fun and all, but you really, I think it really puts things in perspective on how, you know, how little the outcome matters and how much it really is in football when you're watching it. It's just a bunch of guys with their buddies. You know, it's like watching a Brett Favre Wrangler commercial. They're just missing the dog, you know, missing the dog, and you know, and they're not wearing jeans. They're out there playing with their buddies. It's got to be something different. And skills, I think a skills competition is an interesting idea. I think a futures game is probably more of the direction it should go, because I know the NFL wants to keep the TV contract large for that, and
yeah,
to have a game, I think, would be the biggest thing for them to do. It's just, you know, you're looking at, I think that's where you got to go. I think you got to do that, and I don't know if you end up playing like. You got to make it more like what the NBA does. The NBA does have a big All-Star game, and it is a very serious game as well. You know, because there's not a lot of defense in that game either. But to have the younger the futures game, and that's interesting. They have the skills competition, and they bring in, you know, they have the celebrity games and all that kind of stuff that makes it more of a circus and spectacle. Then you know, makes it a big event rather than a game that no one wants to watch. So I'm with you, and I don't think Mike McCarthy missing anything to do with him other than being sick. But you know, there's everyone. And here's the thing, Brian. At the end of the season, after you play 16, 17, 18 games, depending on where you made through the season, everybody in the NFL is hurt. And I don't want to say injured, but everybody's hurt. Everybody's banged up. Everybody's black and blue. And when you get to that point, you don't want to go. There's something you can point to, and it's viable. And I think we saw that happen a lot this year. I just look at the rosters. I remember turning on the game and being like, I didn't remember that, you know, Jameis Winston made the Pro Bowl. Like, I didn't remember that, you know, that Tyrod Taylor made the Pro Bowl. It lessens the, you know, kind of the impact and the honor of being a Pro Bowler. I know it doesn't lessen it as far as guys getting bonuses. You have to be a balloted member of the Pro Bowl to get that cash bonus if you have that in your contract.
Yep.
But, you know, as far as, you know, the quote honor of being there, it's somewhat diminished, I think, when you have, this year, 180 – 133 invites or something like that after when it was all said and done.
Yeah.
A little insane.
Yeah. As for the guy who replaced McCarthy, Winston Moss, do you think the visibility he received as head coach last night will help him land a head coaching job someday, somewhere down the line? Because there's kind of this discussion every year about the lack of minority coaches in the NFL, you know, relative to the, you know, the population of black players in the NFL, which is high. Did this help Winston Moss at all, kind of being in the spotlight last night?
I mean, honestly, Brian, I would probably say no. It didn't hurt him. I think it made it help from a fan perspective.
Yep.
Winston's brought in the next season as a head coaching candidate. I think the familiarity from any fans that watched the Pro Bowl, that definitely is a plus. But we're talking about owners and GMs, and I would like to think for the most part, unless, you know, possibly it's Cleveland or here in Tennessee with the Titans, where I feel like the ownership is less than involved in the process. And the Haskins in Cleveland are involved, but I feel like they just make poor decisions in general. But I'd like to think that the majority of the front office in the NFL don't need to watch the Pro Bowl to see or to find a head coach. I think they know about Winston.
True.
I think Winston's career speaks for itself.
Yep.
It's just one of those things. I think it's great from a visibility standpoint for the fan to see him in that leadership role and to kind of have the familiarity with that. But, you know, I think when the next round of head coaching hirings, which inevitably will happen sometime mid-season and next season, do come around, it's going to be about, you know, who's qualified. And obviously the Rooney Rule is a great thing. It does attempt to level the playing field in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
by requiring teams to to interview a minority. And it'll make sense. You're right. The racial makeup of the NFL, I think, does dictate that the opportunities need to be there for minority coaches. It's just the inequity is pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm also from the school of, guys need to be qualified, and teams should hire the most qualified, most deserving guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily agree. And to me, it's kind of abused. You watch inevitably every year at the end of the regular season, there's some coach you've never heard of who's a running backs coach for somebody that gets the head coaching job interview, and it seems trivial and it seems patronized, and I think that is a shameless abuse. But as far as Winston's career as a player speaks for itself,
mm-hmm.
and I think his role with the Packers also speaks for itself, and I think it's just a matter of him getting the opportunity. This was a strange year. If you remember the hiring in the NFL, there was, obviously the front runner for all jobs was Adam Gates, and then probably Hugh Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a set of teams that needed offensive prowess, and I think those guys went quickly. After that, it was a mishmash of guys that had head coaching experience, and other guys. Like, you look at what the Titans did here, and I keep going back to that. It's very visible for me here in Nashville, Tennessee. But, they ended up hiring Mike Mularkey, who was the interim, and, didn't do that very successfully. But you have a disconnected ownership here. So back to what I was saying, unless you are in a position like that where the ownership is disconnected, which doesn't care a whole lot about who the candidates are, who the football minds are, who the successful and guys that are being groomed to be head coaches are,
mm-hmm.
you don't need a guy to coach the Pro Bowl. There's not anybody. Ted Thompson isn't watching the Pro Bowl to see who his next position coach is going to be,
yeah,
right?
And
Elliot, and guys like Elliot Wolf who end up being a GM isn't turning in to see if Edgar has what it takes to be head coach. It's kind of I think a ridiculous notion, but I don't think it is when you're talking about fan bases and them being excited about candidates being brought in without the seat.
Yeah. Sticking with the coaching theme here, can we read anything into the decision of Edgar Bennett calling plays last night, as we learned during the ESPN broadcast of the game, instead of Tom Clements during the Pro Bowl? I almost hesitate to ask this question, but it was unique. I mean, you just think, here's Tom Clements, the guy who's called plays for the Packers, but he doesn't get that, that nod during the Pro Bowl.
Is there a conspiracy against Tom Clements? Is he getting shut out even in the Pro Bowl here? Poor Tom. I mean, he can't catch a break. He catches the blame during the season last year. And then they wouldn't even let him call plays in the Pro Bowl when it's vanilla, easy, installed in 3 days offense. I don't think there's anything against that, Brian, except that, I would think Edgar wants to be a play caller, and we all know how tightly Mike McCarthy now holds on to that. And after giving it to Tom and taking it back, Edgar really does not have a chance to do that or play in that role or be in that role. And I think it was just a thing where he had the opportunity and he doesn't ever get to do it. Yeah, I don't blame Edgar for taking that opportunity.
Yeah.
And, I feel bad for Tom. Tom is really kind of getting the shaft. He's becoming the scapegoat on this, in this whole thing. And if we look at what happened in the season, too, if we look at the way things went, things didn't change when Mike McCarthy got the play sheet back. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden the offense flipped the script.
Yeah.
The problems that were in the offense were inherent. It didn't matter who was calling plays, because either they weren't being called well for one, or they weren't being executed well for two. So I think it's a lot of undue and unfair criticism of Tom Clements for one. I know how much of an offensive mind he is. I know how much he's meant to Aaron's career. I know how much he's been a part of the development of Aaron as a quarterback. I know how much Aaron believes in Tom. And so from that standpoint, when the Packers offense really got clicking, you know, clicking, and I use that sort of loosely because it really didn't look like, still didn't look like any offense that we know from years before.
Mm-hmm.
It really, ironically or not, was when we, you know, when the Packers went to no huddle, when the Packers went to a hurry up tempo offense that, you know, with plays called by the quarterback at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, that's really my take. And, but I think if you rewatch the games and rewatch the tape, you know, by and large, Brian, the times the offense really got things moving and was effective, you know, aside from the Hail Marys, it was when Aaron was calling plays and they were going on an up-tempo, quick offense. Yeah. I think when they began to huddle up and change personnel and the plays were being called in, I think when things got stagnant for the most part. And even when they huddled and were successful, many times the plays were made outside of the pocket when the play broke down. So it's really, really tough to say that Mike McCarthy taking over the play calling made any difference at all. I would say any measurable difference, right? And that's my opinion. Watch every game, rewatch a few of the games for tape to kind of see, have a good feel. And, you know, I've watched every Packers game for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I would say there was minimal to any difference once play calling was transferred. And I think we're looking at a season where, as the injury started to affect the offensive line and the receiving core, you know, after those first six games, you know, they lost to the Broncos, and I think that was just a bad loss. You can't be that unprepared for an undefeated team coming out of the bye. But as the season continued and the injuries piled up, a lot of the plays that were made on the Packers side were made as broken plays outside of the pocket. I mean, obviously not everyone, but then when the offense was seemed to move, when they won games, when they beat Washington, it was the offense in a tempo offense, in a hurry up, in a no huddle where the plays were called line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think fundamentally there's a few things. There's not one fix. There's a lot of holes in this boat. We've talked about it before. There's a lot of holes in this boat that have to do with personnel, not having the right personnel, not having Jordy, not having even Ty, so you don't have an outside receiver that can take the top off of the defense.
Yep.
Not having a tight end, and I love Richard Rodgers, and I think there's a lot of unfair criticisms on him, on his abilities. You know, he can only do what he can do physically, and we understand that, and there are limitations to that. And yes, he's not Greg Olsen, he's not Jimmy Graham, Tyler Eifert, he's not Rob Gronkowski. We know that,
yep.
But he is a very serviceable tight end within an offense that has playmakers, and they don't have the playmakers right now, Brian. And,
yeah.
And part of that's Jordy, part of that's Randall being hurt, but Randall isn't, I mean, we found out this season, Randall isn't the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Randall's a great slot receiver, but he's not the guy, and you got to have someone who can take the top off the defense that didn't have that. We obviously know now we didn't have, you know, we didn't have a fully healthy, fully fit Eddie Lacy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at a lot of mixed match pieces. And you're also looking at, I think, for the first time, maybe in Aaron's tenure as a starter, maybe we're seeing that his skill set didn't cover the entirety of the sins of the offense. And I mean, that'd be a lot to ask any quarterback this season. Not just the last year's MVP.
Yeah.
And I think that actually gave us a better look at coaching and at the preparedness of the offensive game plan and actually at the effectiveness of the play calling. And I know that I've banged this drum a few times, especially over the months that we've talked. I feel like many, if not most, of the games the Packers entered into this season, especially in the offensive side of the ball, they were out-schemed and out-coached. Mm-hmm. And I take that from the standpoint is that I think, and I don't like to ask your opinion on this when I after I finish this point, but I think watching each game, it was easy as someone who didn't take notes on it and just watched, right,
mm-hmm.
for me to make really, really educated guesses on what we were going to call in situations. And I feel like be right like 90, 95% of the time. This is going to be a top sweep on a third and two. I mean, or a 2 yard flat play to Richard Rodgers on third and three.
Yep.
This is what happened, and it happened repeatedly. And, you know, it just kind of was a perfect storm this year. And I want to ask you too. I have a question too. I know we haven't covered it. I don't know if it wasn't on our list, but one of the stories that came out in this last week, and it kind of pertains to what we were talking about, Brian, is that allegedly and reportedly Mike McCarthy has some beef or has a point of conflict with Ted Thompson about Ted Thompson's philosophy in roster makeup and how he's developing this team. Do you think, and this has been a big topic I know in the media, especially in the Packer media, do you think it's time for Ted Thompson to change his philosophy to compensate and to allow for the closing window that Aaron has, you know, in his prime and on their championship window, you know, of his career?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've banged this drum myself quite a bit, and I wrote one column at 24/7 Sports. I did several radio interviews. For the by and large, I think Ted Thompson correctly plays the offseason the way he should, not investing a ton of money into free agency. That being said, I like to point out personally what I thought was a poor decision two off seasons ago in 2014 when the Packers had the opportunity to sign tight end Owen Daniels and didn't. For what reason, I don't really know. He would have came cheap. I know he had an injury history, but that didn't prevent other teams from signing him. And on top of that, that they haven't addressed the inside linebacker position for years. And I think if there was any place you go and get involved in free agency, that may have been worth it because it would have prevented Clay Matthews from playing inside linebacker, you know, for the past two seasons, and I think would have had a big impact on the Packers' defense. When you look at how close they were last season to making the Super Bowl, when you see them being overtime away from making the NFC Championship game this year, I think there are small moves you can make that could be the difference. What are your thoughts?
I'm with you 100%. You know, A.J. Hawk is probably one of my favorite players just as a person that I think that ever played for the Packers, at least in my 10 years of experience there. But, you know, there was the last few years of his career and then this last couple seasons. You're right. Like, you're playing Clay Matthews, who's arguably your best player on defense out of position.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably one of the better edge pass rushers, if not, you know, top three, top four in the NFL. You're playing him in the middle, and granted, Clay's an amazing athlete. He was able to adapt. You know, I don't give a whole lot to him making the Pro Bowl, quote Pro Bowl this season, an inside linebacker because it's you know that doesn't really count. I think in my mind, it's an accolade anymore. But you're right; he didn't address it, and Ted even had the opportunity to address it. And I've talked about this before in previous months, not even in free agency, but in the draft.
Yeah.
He sat last season, you know, sat there and had all four, like, top prospects and inside linebackers still on the board, including Stephon Anthony, who, you know, who led the Saints in tackles this year,
mm-hmm.
and Eric Kendricks, who went to our arch rivals in purple, who went in the second round.
Yeah.
I mean, these players were available and have played at, you know, at that top level in their first rookie season and could have filled that. So, I'm with you 100%. Like, they didn't address it in the draft, and that's been Ted's bread and butter. But then he did not address it in free agency. And I remember sitting here before last season saying, okay, AJ is now in Cincinnati. And yes, AJ wasn't the best inside linebacker. We've been talking for years about needing to upgrade that position. And yet, instead of drafting somebody there, which we didn't, Jake Ryan, but instead of drafting someone high there,
yep.
who could fill that point, fill that spot from day one, we're going to go with whoever was there before who couldn't start ahead of A.J. Hawk.
Yep.
And if A.J. is the bar that we, you know, we're setting the bar there and saying we need to raise this bar because it's not good enough, and we're picking someone to play there that's set behind A.J. Hawk, I mean, that's just, it's ludicrous. Like, you should expect it to be worse. And you're right. Like, Ted, by and large, I would say, has done a good job on the few free agency he brings in. Julius Peppers, I think, has been a great acquisition. Charles Woodson, what can you say about him? You can't say enough about that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you bring him in, and he's fantastic. LaTroy Guyon, you bring him in, he's been a troubled guy. it works here. I think LaTorre's been great. It's not better than B.J. Raji on the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I feel like, and I think it's what you're saying as well, is that like we need to turn up the sense of urgency. Like, unless you really feel like Brett Hundley can step in this draft, long-term draft and development, and get you to step right in for Aaron when Aaron's done, and all these guys are going to grow up and be that team. But you're right. Like, I think I have to go back to what you said. I think you made a really, really good point. We're talking about one or two plays in the course of an 18-game, 19-game season. You know, this year against Arizona and last year against Seattle, we're talking about a couple of plays, fraction of plays, that are the difference between being in the Super Bowl and going home. And the Packers have gone home the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to a series of plays in one game, you could probably go back over the season and find a series of plays in each game that could have been a difference with one, maybe just one personnel change, maybe just one upgrade at inside linebacker, maybe just going and getting that tight end, right?
Yeah.
That's how small the margin of error and how thin the margin of victory is in the NFL. And I'm with you 100%. I like what you're saying that from, Brian, because it is time for there to be a sense of urgency in Green Bay to use the best years of Aaron Rodgers, of Jordy Nelson, you know, of Josh Sitton, you know, of these guys, these veterans that we have that are perennial in and out, you know, best in the NFL, Clay Matthews, to use the best of their careers, because these players aren't players you can replace like overnight or next season. And if this is your core, of your team, you've got to surround it with enough talent. I got to go back to Elliot Wolf, who's the assistant GM, Ron Wolf's son. At Brett Favre's Hall of Fame speech, the one thing that Ron Wolf said, and he alluded to it as well in his Hall of Fame speech, was one regret he has is not surrounding Brett Favre with more talent in his prime.
Yeah.
And I would hate to be sitting here 10 years from now and having Ted Thompson shake his head and saying, man, my biggest regret is I didn't surround Aaron Rodgers with the right guys or enough of the right guys at the right time. And when we won in 2010, everyone said it was going to be a dynasty. This team should win a lot because we were so hurt that year, and we never won another one because we didn't have enough of supporting cast. And I feel like we are getting to the point where that is more of could be as big a possibility as the Packers winning again, and that's why this season has to be different. It's got to be a different approach. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes with Mike and Ted, but I can understand if McCarthy is critical and is questioning Thompson's sense of urgency. And I would applaud it for that if that's the case.
Luke, let's go rapid fire through a few topics here, just because I think they're topical with the Pro Bowl taking place and the guys who took part in the game. Julius Peppers just played in his 9th Pro Bowl on Sunday, but what's his future with the Packers? Do you think he'll retire? Do you think the Packers could ask him to restructure his contract? Thoughts on Peppers?
You know, it's funny, if you'd asked me mid-season, we didn't talk about this midseason, I would have said that Julius is probably done.
Okay.
And that if he wanted to come back, he would come back somewhere else. But he closed the season so strongly. Yeah, I would hope he returns. He's owed a lot of money next season. I believe he's going to be the highest paid. Because we see Mario Williams released, you know, almost for certainly released in Buffalo, Peppers is, you know, going to be in the third year of his $26 million deal with the Packers, and he's owed, you know, a total of $10.5 million this season. That's a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
to pay for, you know, for a guy going into his 15th season. But I think the production's been there. He had 10.5 sacks, including, you know, a strip sack and a playoff. At this point, he's the third highest overall paid outside linebacker in the NFL.
Okay.
If the Packers decide to move on, he's got a dead cap number of about $2.5 million. Which is something that's absorbable, but I don't know what you move on to. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I love how Nick Perry played in the season. I think Nick was really good. But Nick is kind of a one-trick pony in the sense that he's a pure pass rusher. So, you know, him and Mike Neal kind of are those guys where You know, you can drop – Pep is good against the run, and you can drop him even in the coverage. He was dropping the covers last night in the Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see him come back.
Yeah, yeah.
I think at this point you need to talk about if he's worth $10.5 million. We're talking about basically, you know, $500,000 per sack. Are the Packers worth – is that worth paying for? I think having his presence in the locker room, giving Julius a chance to have another run at the biggest prize, I think that he'd like to do that. I think it's a good place for him. I think he should come back. I think that they're probably going to have to figure out how to restructure his deal, especially if we're talking about, they want to put a little more talent around him. I mean, he made $12 million last year, total, 10-5. I mean, I think he's probably in the range of like a $7 million guy. Free up some more cap, give him $3.5 million more to go, you know, to go grab somebody, to make some moves, to, you know, whatever they need to do, and Ted Thompson deems, you know, doable. I think you got to bring him back. I don't think you can replace those 10.5 sacks very easily.
On the offensive side of the football, John Kuhn played in the Pro Bowl last night, and now he's a free agent. Do you think he'll be back for another season? Because the Packers also have the rookie fullback waiting in the wings with Aaron Ripkowski.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Like, your heart says you want to bring John back. And, you know, John's a folk hero in Green Bay. And I know this. I know that the offense, and it's been said a bunch of times by Aaron and by other guys in the offense, the second smartest guy on the offense, John Kuhn, when he's out there. And, you know, he makes a lot of decisions in the backfield that actually, you know, things he may not see in real time unless you're really watching him. But that happened when you watch on film is John's making plays that allow plays to happen, whether he's opening a hole or whether he's picking up a flip correctly, you know, or just picking up a first down. You're right, though. It's a tough situation. John is, you know, in the latter years of his career, and there is a young guy who played well on special teams, and Aaron Ripkowski, who could step in and do that. Again, with him, I would have a hard time letting him go. Especially with this team, you know, it's again with Ted Thompson. If this is a win this year, like you see in Denver with John Elway, which I feel like we need to do, this needs to happen in Green Bay. If win it all this year. If that's your philosophy next year, then both these guys need to come back.
Yeah.
If you're going to stick with the draft and develop, and you know, continue along that road, then it might not be a situation where John Kuhn returns. Now, if I'm Ted Thompson here, I bring both those guys back.
Yeah,
but you know, you could look at. I mean, looking at strictly by the numbers, it would seem that Kuhn. Gosh, it's tough. It's tough to bring back a fullback who, you know, is going into his 11th year and he was 33 years old. It's a little tough to do that. But the price that he signed the last time was 1 year, $920,000. You know, with $50,000 in bonuses there. You can get him back at that price, but I don't see why you don't.
Yeah.
He's a great locker room guy. He's a good special teams guy. And he's a really, you know, he's someone that Aaron Rodgers trusts. And I think that's just as important, especially with the state of the offense, as anything else is.
Final question, Luke, before we let you go. Just because it has nothing to do with the Pro Bowl or even really with the Packers, but it does have to do with the NFC North. Kelvin Johnson apparently hanging it up. Kind of came a little bit out of the blue a little bit, just seemingly in the prime of his career. What impact does this have on the NFC North division?
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. I know that I covered that story and kind of was instrumental in us releasing that yesterday. I actually wrote the article for us as it was breaking.
Okay.
It's crazy. I mean, no secret, Calvin Johnson's been banged up the last 2 years, and I think that played big. Apparently, he told Matthew Stafford and Stephen Pollock before the season that the last year was going to be his last year. This last season was going to be his last year, and he asked them to keep it confidential, and they did. And then after the season, he told Jim Caldwell that he was going to hang it up. And I know the Lions organization has asked him to kind of take his time in pondering there, take his time in thinking it through, but it sounds like Calvin's already thought it through. So when it comes to the makeup of the NFC North, I don't see it being as big a deal as Adrian Peterson being out last year. I think Peterson, because of the volume of touches that Adrian got in Minnesota, I think we saw the difference this season in that team as opposed to the year before. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Detroit is a tough team, a real tough team. I mean, they beat the Packers in Lambeau this year. For what it's worth, they probably should have swept the Packers, you know, except for like a miracle Hail Mary to Richard Rodgers. We have, you know, they took the Packers able to win in Detroit. You know, it's nice from a Packers standpoint, especially to play in the secondary and have to match up with Megatron every season. I don't think it shifts the power inning, to be honest. I think Detroit is on the cusp and it hurts them. But I believe that front office is going to try to replace, if Calvin does indeed walk, which sounds like, you know, he's 95-98% he's walking. If he does indeed walk, they'll try to compensate for the loss with him with a free agent or in the draft. It sounds like they're already trying to prepare for that. So, yeah, you can compensate for Calvin Johnson. You really can't. But really, Brian, if we were talking about Minnesota Vikings, I'd say it's a much bigger deal, because I think the difference between Minnesota and Green Bay is a lot smaller than it is between Green Bay and Detroit. Mm-hmm. As far as where they're at, you know, sort of matching up. I think the Packers, we know the Packers had a down season, and I don't see the Packers losing to the Lions, you know, this next season if they can get themselves together like we expect them, like we all expect to see them play. But Minnesota is a tough team, and I see if Minnesota lost, you know, like losing Adrian Peterson the year before, I said being a much bigger deal than Calvin Johnson, just purely because he's a matchup nightmare, but purely for the time and the amount of volume that player touches the ball. Like, I remember watching enough Lions games saying, what are they doing not giving Calvin the ball? Like, he mm-hmm. you know, have 4 or 5 catches in the first half and have none in the second half. So, a big deal if you're the secondary in the NFC North. As far as sort of a big picture, I don't see it shifting any kind of power, because I still think it is Green Bay and Minnesota on top of the pile there. And, you know, Chicago's going to have some work to do. Jay Cutler had his best season as a pro under Adam Gase. You know, Adam Gase was coaching in Miami. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know what number of offensive coordinators this is for Jay, but, you know, he's got to restart again, and you got to feel for the guy there. He loves him. He's kind of like the Alex Smith of Jay Cutler quarterbacks. I mean, he has different offensive coordinators, all the teams, like almost every season. So, I don't expect Cutler to play as well as he did, just based on that standpoint. And, you know, they may or may not get Alshon Jeffrey back. And it's another big thing to talk about in the NFC North, is if Alshon Jeffrey walks from Chicago and Calvin Johnson retires, you essentially probably have two of the three best wide receivers in the NFC North no longer playing in the North, with the third being Jordy Nelson coming back.
Yep.
So that is all good news for the Packers. I mean, and if the Packers were to, you know, I like to throw out the idea of the Packers going after Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, it's time to make a change on that offense. And it means bringing in a tall, physical, fast wide receiver like Alshon Jeffrey. That's something Aaron hasn't had in his entire career there. And it gives him, I mean, if you, I'm dreaming here, but I mean, what if? I mean, you had, you know, this I think every Packer fan has this on the opposite. It's like, what if we got this guy? What if it was Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Alshon Jeffrey lining up at receiver? I mean, how much of a difference? I think it makes a huge difference. And I know that so many Packer fans, you know, even like myself, get frustrated because you start dreaming about these big free agent names out there, about the impact they can make, and then Ted Thompson does the Ted Thompson thing, and they don't know, and everybody's really upset and bitter. You know, hits Twitter and says everything about how Ted's not prepared. Maybe, but let's just hope this is the year that a few acquisitions are made that can really make a difference for this team in the positions we need to make differences in. And I'm with you. And the inside linebacker needs to be addressed. And I would say they need to address the tight end position either in free agency or in the draft. Yep. And not because Richard is incompetent, because he doesn't have the physical tools of, you know, of these great tight ends that we see that create the mismatch problem.
Well, Luke, it's appropriate that the next time we'll talk will be the beginning of March, and that will be on the doorstep of free agency in the NFL, so we can hit more on it then. Thank you so much for joining me here this morning as we talked about the Pro Bowl and all sorts of topics relating to the Pro Bowl. It's been good to talk to you, and we'll do it again next month.
Ryan, I've had a blast. Thanks again for having me on, and you know, looking forward to having some fun free agency, fun draft talk next month, and you know, who knows what happens between now and then. That's exciting about the NFL. Different kind of exciting in the off season, but you know, everybody is now, you know, with the exception of the Super Bowl here, everybody's undefeated. You know, our team attackers are undefeated. They're gonna be undefeated week in and week out, and hopefully we can go, you know, they can build a team. I say we a lot, probably the Packers fan can do, but you know, they can get the ship right and get these whole club. You know?
Sounds good, man. Sounds good, Luke. Thanks again so much. Talk to you next month.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ryan.
Take care. Luke Rogers, our 24/7 Sports Insider, joining us here at Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well. And that pretty much is going to do it for the today's episode of the podcast. Normally we have some other segments, Packers news of the day. There's not much news to go over other than the Pro Bowl. Team Irvin beats Team Rice 49-27. The Packers coaches beat the Packers players in the Pro Bowl. And as far as the day ahead is concerned, there's nothing in the immediate future. The attention all this week is going to be at the Super Bowl in San Francisco. Tonight, the NFL universe revolves around Super Bowl opening night at the SAP Center in San Jose, California. What formerly used to be media day for the Super Bowl, now called Super Bowl opening night. It's a big made-for-TV event in prime time. You'll see it on the NFL Network. You'll see it on ESPN2. So if you want football coverage, that's where you'll go on Monday. And we'll continue to talk more about Packers topics in the upcoming days here. In fact, interesting, next episode of Railbird Central, we'll have Matt Harmon of NFL.com joining us, fantasy football writer, but also an analyst point of view. We're going to ask him about his recently published article on Packers wide receiver Jeff Janis, and he'll have all sorts of thoughts on other Packers wide receivers as well. We're excited to bring him on the show on Wednesday, and so that's what we're looking forward to, folks. That'll do it. Thanks for joining us every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted on demand. Later in the day, you're listening to the longest-tenured Packers podcast on the internet. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you give us a rating or a review on iTunes. Just search Cheesehead TV. Something brief, doesn't have to be long, but we'd really appreciate this. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. If you could do us that solid, we'd definitely appreciate it. That'll do it, folks. Have a good day. Have a good Monday. Have a good week, and we'll see you again in just a few days. I leave you today with a song called Song in My Head by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack Go.